He's Brap again. Welcome, Brap.
Hello, and welcome to Brap Talk. This is a weekly-ish podcast about motorcycles, life, the universe, and everything. And I am your host, Shaheen Alvandi, and in front of me is the world-famous Motogluten. Now, most of us know Motogluten as Davin. Davin, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, it's me. Thanks for having me, Shaheen. This is lovely. Let's see. I'm a 6 foot, 200 pound white male. Grew up in Michigan, and I like to ride motorcycles.
What are your hobbies?
Man, I like riding motorcycles, listening to music, and that's about it.
And eating tacos.
Yes, I do like to eat tacos.
So, Davin, I met you 9 years ago when I moved here to Portland, and you were at the old Icon Motorsports.
Yes.
And you've been around the industry for a hot minute. How long have you been in the industry?
Since 2005, so 19 years.
Same here.
Yeah.
You and I basically entered about the same time.
Yep, August 2005, I started at Triumph Detroit.
Wow, that's amazing. So you are one of the coolest people in the industry as far as I'm concerned, because you fucking walk the walk, you talk the talk, you stand up for all the good things in motorcycling, and I really haven't seen you see a motorcycle and not love it and not ride the fuck out of it. Like, I love when you post all your previous ownerships and it's like, here's a Chopper, here's a Bobber, here's a Triumph, here's a Honda, here's a Ducati, the banana hammock that you had for a hot minute, Futura. So where are you at now? What are you doing?
So right now, as far as career and stuff, I live in Temecula, California. I am the vice president of sales and purchasing for Biltwell, little hipster helmet company. Been down there for 2 years. Today, I think, is today should be my 2-year review. So I wonder how that went.
I hope it went well. We'll see. Do you think they'll keep you around?
We'll see when I get back. Yeah. No, I've been down there for 2 years. I was here for, 9 years before that in Portland working at Icon. And then I took that year and worked for Triumph Corporate as a regional sales.
How was that?
Man, I thought that was what I wanted to be when I grew up, but it was too much like a real job. It was kind of miserable.
Interesting. So we had one episode, a couple episodes ago, where we talked about motorcycle industry jobs.
Yep.
And that is, you know, that seems to be in the, you know, forefront of most career-minded motorcycle enthusiasts who want to get into the industry. And like you said, they kind of think that's what they want to do when they grow up and be a regional business manager or some kind of a rep for a company like Triumph. Because on the surface of it, Triumph is a pretty bitchin' company. They make beautiful bikes. They've got a long history. They've got something for everybody. To me, they fit a very interesting niche in that they're a European, what I would call a premium brand that has motorcycles that start at like $5,000.
Yep.
And go and tickle, you know, $27,000-$28,000 with the big bad boy 1200 Tiger with all of its goodies put on it.
Exactly. Yeah. The job itself wasn't terrible. It was just like, man, it was during COVID and that whole deal. So like there was 7 regional managers and they furloughed. No, there was 12 and they furloughed 7. There was 5 of us doing the work of 12.
Ooh.
And business dipped for about a week and then it just skyrocketed. And we were doing so much work. I was working basically 20 hours a day. It was crazy. And like the pay wasn't really worth it. So that's kind of why I went back to Icon, is just because I was like, man, I'm not having a good time right now, bro.
Yeah.
Like it was just not fun.
Like for the dollars they were paying you. Yeah. And I'm like, it wasn't less time.
Yeah. It was a cool job. I'm still friendly with everybody. You know, like my old boss there, we're still on good terms. But it just wasn't my thing. You know, I tried it. I gave it a year. I did everything at least once. You know, I did a good job, you know, like forward order period. I sold all the bikes I was supposed to in the time allotted and, you know, that kind of stuff. So it was fine, but it wasn't as fun as, you know, like I think my job at Icon and my job now at Biltwell are probably two of the best jobs in the industry that anyone could have, to be honest. And you know, just to have the freedom to do what I like. And, you know, I get paid to ride motorcycles a lot, but it's still work, but it's awesome.
like there's still expectations, there's still deadlines, there's still P&Ls that you have to live and die by, but you get to travel. Like you went to New Zealand for, how long were you gone?
Like 16 days.
And you covered like the entire country basically.
Yeah. So I turned on a new distributor in New Zealand last year, June, I think. And, you know, August, it took them a couple months to get their product, get them turned on. And they're, man, these guys are good. Like if they had more than 5 million people in that country to sell to, these guys would take over the world. Like
wow.
They're so good at what they do. They're, you know, they've got a good lineup of brands. They like have us, Pirelli, Fox, you know, they do motocross, street, mountain bikes, all that kind of stuff. And they're just really on top of what they're doing.
What makes them good at what they do? What is the definition? Like if you could pick three things that they do really well, what is it that makes them stand out?
Marketing is one. Like they know their market and they know how to sell things to that group of people. They're just, their website is really nice. They have a storefront that, you know, like you can order directly from the rideshop.co.nz and that's their little web store.
Mm-hmm.
But then they also have, you know, a bunch of dealers. You know, they've got motorcycle dealers, mountain bike dealers, and lifestyle shops.
Huh.
So they hit all the right people to sell to. So, I mean, it's marketing mostly because they know what they're doing and they know how to talk about it, which is really hard for some people. Because there's so many brands out there that have a really good product, but just can't get the message across.
Right, right.
So
right.
It's maddening sometimes, but yeah, these guys are good. And, yeah, just good people with good attitudes. They're not a bunch of like old jaded motorcycle bros. And they're all like, you know, one guy rides the little, like he builds like the little 50cc, like vintage Hondas.
Oh.
Another guy rides, you know, like everything he has is a super bike. You know, one guy only rides off road. So they cover their bases where sometimes, you know, the distributors might be too motocross or too Harley or too whatever. So these guys kind of cover all their bases. And then the customer base in New Zealand was crazy too. Like I've never seen so many just Moto Guzzis. There was Guzzis all over down there. Moto Guzzis.
I wonder why. I wonder if Moto Guzzi just has a really great coverage there for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a ton of them. I like, you know, per capita, but I saw more Guzzis and Triumphs and I think I told you this before, but Multistradas. Like
you were saying that.
Every other bike was a Multistrada where you go to any other country in the world and it's like 1250 GSs,
right.
1200 GSs, GSs everywhere, but there was a ton of Multistradas.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it was cool. It was like refreshing to see like, you know, I've never seen so many Triumph Speedmasters, like the old versions. Huh. Like they're not the most incredible motorcycle on the planet, but man, there was a ton of them there.
Just had a following over there for some reason.
Yeah. And it's just like, and they're really like Euro over there too, where they like the Harley Davidson Sport Glide, the V Rods, like Breakouts, like all those kind of swoopy choppery bikes. They're really
interesting.
Into, like the Euro guys.
What's the riding like over there? What's the geography like? Is it pretty so we twisty did the, roads or?
Yes. There's a little bit of everything. So we did pretty much the whole country. We flew into Auckland, picked up a couple of hire bikes there. That's what they call them.
It's and, rentals for you Americans.
Right, exactly. Grabbed a couple hire bikes and rode down to Hamilton, which is about an hour south of Auckland, and met up with the guys from our distributor. And then we went from there, kind of bombed down to the bottom of the North Island to, Wellington. And then between the North and South Islands, it's a 3-hour ferry ride.
Huh.
So we jumped on the ferry the next morning. And then the South Island is known for like all the mountains and, you know, like rivers and all that beautiful stuff.
Right.
Where the North Island is more warm weather and beaches. So, in the South Island, man, we hit everything. We went through Arthur Pass, Lewis Pass, which are like these beautiful twisty mountain pass roads with there are tons of bridges. And the whole country is like 2-lane roads. Once you get out of the city, like between Auckland and Wellington, or between Auckland and Hamilton, there was 4-laners, but then like you get out of there and it's just 2-lane country roads. And there was another freeway, like 20 minutes each side of Christchurch, but the rest of the country was all just 2-lane roads.
Oh man, that sounds
like
dreamy.
55 miles an hour speed limits down to like 20.
I do wonder if, you know, the geography and the riding, the type of roads that you have kind of, you know, rule what kind of motorcycle or, you know, vehicle you're going to be riding. Because here in Oregon, it's funny, like at Moto Corsa, we sell a ton of Multistradas and Desert X's because in the Pacific Northwest, we're just ripe with these awesome, you know, sort of like B roads and gravel roads and off-road areas that you can just go on and, you know, explore.
Yep.
And so, like, looking at your photos, it just seemed like it makes sense why there was so many multistratas there. But at the same time, you know, you got like V-Rods and...
Yeah. And the multistratas aren't cheap down there either. Like, they're, no. The conversion and their dollar is, it's crazy. Like, it doesn't make sense to my little tiny man brain. You know, like, I think we're paying $3 a liter for gas, which is translates to $11 per gallon,
woo-hoo!
Which with the conversion is still $7.
Fuck so yeah, it ain't
cheap. And it's like everything, you know, like a Monster, how much are they here? $15,000?
$14,500.
Yeah, they were $22,000 down there.
Holy shit.
So that's a lot of money. Like Tamara, my girlfriend's got her Rebel 1100, which is like a $12,000 bike here, and it was $20,000 over there.
Wow. So
it's, yeah.
And I'm living.
Yeah, I asked the dudes we were with, I'm like, how does everyone here make $200,000 a year to be able to afford this stuff? And he's like, no, people make like 60. I'm like, Jesus. And he's like, yeah, it's not like you guys where you have a garage full of motorcycles. You know, we have one. So I was like, makes sense. But man, it was beautiful. So
what was your favorite thing in New Zealand?
Probably, man, we went out one day, we went to Milford Sound, which is this beautiful, like, it's basically just a dead end to the sound that you can jump on these little like ferry boats that take you out to the ocean. That was beautiful. The ride in, I mean, it's just like glacial rivers and like waterfalls coming down the mountains and all sorts of beautiful shit like that. That was really cool. And it, apparently they get like 3 weeks of clear skies every year.
We had
a day and the guys were like, you have to go to Milford Sound right now. It's clear. Like people live here their whole lives and never get to see it.
That's amazing.
So that was cool. And then the reason we went over there was for the Burt Munro Challenge, which was down in Invercargill where Burt Munro is from.
Oh.
So Burt Munro, as I think we should know, is...
is that the fastest little Indian?
The world's fastest Indian. So that dude lived at the bottom, the southernmost tip of New Zealand. And every year now they do like kind of a rally for him. And it's rather than like Sturgis and... you know, like pirates getting drunk. It's racing. So there was a hill climb the first day, beach racing the next day, superbike racing one day, drag racing one day. So it was like 5 days of racing.
Just motorbikes on motorbikes on motorbikes.
Yeah, it was cool. So
that's amazing.
We went down for that. That was the main reason to support them at that event. And then
I'm always curious, is there a good contingency of Indian motorcycles there?
There was a few. I mean, there was, you know, but they're expensive.
They're expensive here.
Yeah. They had so the hardware store in Invercargill has all of Bert's old bikes and like his wall of, you know,
really?
Gods of Speed. Yeah.
That's cool.
Wild. And man, they had Indian there. So they had one of the King of the Beggar bikes in the store and one of the FTR flat track bikes. But man, it's the Scouts were like $25,000.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Dang it, man. It's okay. So what would you actually, the question I've always been curious about, how long did it take you to get used to riding on the other side of the road?
Not that long, actually.
Really?
It clicked right away. Like it probably took 20 minutes to like kind of figure it out. Cause it was like, you were always kind of looking the wrong way and like waiting for somebody to jump out in front of you. But like every morning, as soon as we left the hotel or wherever we were staying, I started going down the wrong side of the road. But then like, I quickly realized that, you know, okay, wait, I'm still in New Zealand.
I feel like every morning I'd be like, all right, Shaheen, remember, don't do the thing. And then I would still do it.
I would just take off and go down the wrong side. So
what were you riding?
I was riding a Road King.
A big ass Harley Road King touring bike.
Yeah. It was, so February is like the middle of summer down there.
Right.
And, you know, there's 50 hire bikes in the country, apparently.
That's and, it.
I don't know. Like, I tried probably 10 different companies for, our photographer Jeff came with me. And man, it was like, I don't have bikes for those dates, but I can get you one for these dates and then maybe another one for these dates. I'm like, no, I need two for these dates.
Yeah.
And that's all we were able to get. So I had a 2018, you know, 95th anniversary Road King or whatever it was, 105th anniversary.
158th anniversary.
169. And then Jeff,
you had technically one of the better handling touring bikes Harley has, because there's no weight up front. It's just a handlebar.
Yeah. And that's headlight. I'm a non-windshield kind of dude. And that's, you know,
did this one not have a windshield?
Didn't even have a windshield.
Oh, wow. Like,
keep your windshield to yourself. I don't want
that's amazing. You kept it even through the rain and everything.
Oh yeah, dude, it rained the whole first week we were there too, like crazy, and I just got pissed on the whole time, but I was wearing my Revit dirt gear and I kept nice and dry.
I love that jacket.
Oh man, I was the aubergine this angel and I was just so pumped.
This show brought to you by Revit.
Yeah, no, that jacket.
I actually partnered up with them for the one show, which is what brought you here to Portland.
Yes.
What are you doing at the one show?
I'm just walking around with my pocket full of business cards.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know if Biltwell had like a cool helmet thing going on.
No, we're not set up at all. Nothing.
Are you reconning for next year?
Yeah, just kind of checking the vibes.
Okay.
Mostly vibe check.
I mean, I feel like you know the vibes already. You've been here long enough.
Yeah, no, I didn't come up last year and I wanted to get out of the house for a couple of days. So good. Here I am. Yeah, I'm just going to check things out, say hi to my friends.
You brought some good weather with you.
Yeah, no, you're welcome.
It's a spring in Portland is, you know, hit or miss.
Yeah.
You either get beautiful weather. It's just drunk. It's like sunny, rainy, like bro. Yeah.
It's been like that in SoCal too. Like
you guys
saw a thing the other day that said LA had more rain than Seattle this year.
Last year as well.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So,
I've been getting yelled at since I moved down there.
Yo, Southern Californians, come on up. The weather's nice here.
It's perfect in Portland right now. It's
gorgeous. Good riding all year. You don't have to worry about the rain so much apparently. And the rain honestly here is like drizzle. Over there, it's like,
yeah, it's
monsoon.
Been like, yeah, downpours and like rivers in those streets and mudslides and stuff. It's been pretty gnarly. Like San Diego nearly fell off a couple months ago.
Crazy.
Yeah. There's people like had water up to their ceilings and shit.
I believe it. It's funny because like I saw you, what, a month or so ago when we came down to bring our buddy Joe Jackson's Hyper Mono, and you took us for a beautiful ride through Idlewild and all the mountains over there. And in my head, I was like, oh, we're going to Cali. The weather's going to be nice. And then Ann was like, yo, you better check your phone's weather app because it's been crazy down there. And as we were driving down, every bit of I-5, like in Sacramento, everything was just wet. Everything looked like just lakes. So it must have rained like days before we left.
Yeah, it hasn't been as bad this season, but last season it was crazy. But yeah, it's still been way wetter than normal, and which is great because this superb loom.
That's right.
It's doing its thing. But yeah, I mean, dude, there was snow on the ground on that ride. You know, like
there was, Idlewild. Well, I mean, we went up pretty high. What's Idlewild? Yeah. Like 6,000 feet?
Probably.
There was snow all around us. Lots of gravel. I always forget how much I love riding with you. You just have this smooth, you were on your little T100 Triumph Bonneville.
Yep. T120,
excuse me.
Yeah,
T120.
Right.
Somebody at Triumph is like, this motherfucker needs to learn his motorcycles. And you had such a great pace where I could look at all the beauty around me and also have a good time on the Street Fighter.
That bike is so much fun. It is seriously the most pleasant motorcycle I've ever owned.
I think the word pleasant is perfect for that
so
bike.
So good.
It is truly one of the most pleasant bikes on the planet.
Yeah.
I like how your mic stand is just slowly getting down to your chest.
It's getting droopy. So
it's
I
getting
might
droopy.
Have to,
it's
might
sad.
Have to adjust here.
Tighten that, baby. Tighten that,
hold
baby.
It like this.
Don't be sad about it.
Spill my water. Yeah, get it.
Brap Talk is very professional. We have all the highest level of stuff. Including mic stands.
I'm just going to hold it like this because it makes it more.
I think
better.
I'm gonna switch to like some headsets.
Yeah, I'm surprised we're not wearing headphones.
We're gonna do like I don't know, an ESPN show. Get some cameras here.
I was picturing a green screen.
So we can like show the stuff we're talking about.
I've always just pictured you and Q like sitting in a weirdly lit room with headphones and some stinky candles.
I mean, you're one third of the way. You're right. It's a weirdly lit room. Now I need some headphones and some stinky candles. Right. I don't know. We're going to have to ask Quentin. Hey, what do y'all think? WeBrapTalk@gmail.com. What do you think is Quentin's favorite candle scent?
Right.
David, what do you think it is?
It's probably like a lavender hibiscus or something.
I think it's like two-stroke.
Oh, man. He's one of those guys, he would trick you like that. Like,
yeah.
He probably has two, and one of them's lavender hibiscus, and the other one is two-stroke Castrol.
And the thing is, if you get them both together, it's just this red smell.
He puts one in the entryway and then one by the laundry machine and it just makes it perfect.
Oh man.
Makes it smell like fog.
We were in Austin last week for the GP and Ann and I decided to do, you know, just on Monday before we left, we decided to go be tourists. And we went to this really awesome men's clothing store called Stag. It's on South Congress. And they had these candles and one of them was diesel. And I smell it. I'm like, motherfucker, that's diesel.
Oh, gross. That is the worst smell.
Yeah, like, why?
Do you like that? You're giving me a sinus headache just talking
about
it.
Yeah, like, why is this a thing?
Gross.
So I was like, well, maybe they have two-stroke.
They probably do. There's a little shop in Big Bear called Mystic Moto.
Huh.
And it's all moto-themed, but they have, like, moto-scented candles. I have one at home that I don't remember what it is, but it's, like, gear oil or something, but it's not offensive. And it's in a cute little like old timey oil can.
That's awesome. One of my least favorite smells in the whole wide world is it's a very specific motorcycle. It's a Panigale 1199 or 1299. When they're brand new, the smell makes me gag.
Yeah. There's a couple smells like that.
It is the worst smell on the planet. And I had brought one to the house years ago when they were new. I just had our demo. I was putting miles on it. And I brought it into the house and I put it in the garage and I was like, why am I gagging?
It's like,
yeah, I kicked the bike out of the garage. I'm like, you sit outside.
Burning all the whatever smells off of it.
I don't know what it is. Cause like the V4 bikes have a sweet smell to them.
Yeah. Cause they dip those in marinara.
Dip them. I would love that. Hey, you had this pasta marinara. It's a very, very good food. It's very nice. No matter what accent I do, Borat comes out. So, you know, it's just.
Wow, will we?
These smell like my sister's marinara.
Oh, shit.
Fuck's sake. All right. Tell me about what you've been up to aside from New Zealand. You had the Biltwell 100.
Yep.
What is that about? Tell our listeners what to look forward to if they decide they want to go and have shenanigans with you.
So Bill 100 started, I think this year was the fourth year, and Biltwell started doing their own events a few years ago because everyone else's were lame. Okay. So, you know, now we've got the one in January, the Parts and Labor Fest, which is like a little trade show. Like, what if we did a trade show but made it fun? That one's kind of cool.
What is that like?
Yeah, exactly. It's cool. Like, it's a bike show / trade show under one roof in San Diego.
Who comes up with these ideas?
It's a team effort.
Okay.
Yeah, we got Otter, our events guy, and then Bill, one of the co-founders.
Like, you're one of the funniest people I know, and I just imagine you just walk into the shop one day, and you're like, guys, I have an idea.
Yeah, I have. There's been a couple things that they let slide here, but I've got quite a few good ones from Icon Days, like naming things and, you know, dumb ideas.
You ever recycle some of the old ones?
Sometimes.
All right, so back to the Biltwell 100.
So the 100 is a desert race. So we do 100 means 100 miles.
Okay.
So the expert classes do 4 25-mile laps.
Wow.
So there's everything from like pull start mini bikes up to, you know, like big adventure bikes and everything between. There's modern classes, you know, so for 250s, 450s, whatever, 500s. There's like Joe Jackson, who we mentioned earlier, did like the little Papio, the CF Moto Papio.
That thing was adorable.
He did a test class for like a relay class for maybe next year. So you could like one person can do a lap. So you have four people on your team and you can each do a lap for the 100 miles.
Awesome.
Which sounds like fun. Yeah. So him and Remy from now what's now called Angel Motorworks did that.
That's right.
But there's, yeah, like, man, one year a guy brought a Coleman dirt bike in the box, put it together at the starting line and raced it.
I love that.
So he did one lap. So those kind of bikes, like there's a misfit class, any person on any bike. There's the pull start mini bike classes. There's regular mini bike classes. There's, you know, modern 20 to 40, 40 to 60, 60 plus, you know, depending on, and we do it for men and women. And then 2 years ago we added adventure bikes. So we do ADV heavy, ADV light. We do vintage mono shock, vintage dual shock. Man, it's really cool because we got damn near 400 people signed up.
Wow.
To race at this place that you can go and ride for free anytime you want to.
Right.
But I mean, we give them like, we print bibs and give them a goodie bag and have an actual like timing company do the timing and all that stuff. So it's a real organized event with a real company behind it, but it's just, you know, our tagline is good times, not lap times.
Right.
Or yeah. Good times, not lap
times.
There's
something magical about making it a real event, but not taking it too seriously.
Yeah. It's like, man, people get butthurt because, you know, their lap times aren't right or whatever. You know, it's like, man, we're just out here to have fun.
Yeah.
Like 2 years ago, some dude brought this Polestar 400cc bike against
Holy
all these
shit.
Little 25cc bikes.
What the fuck?
And he mopped them up, obviously. And everyone's all pissed about it. But it's like, dude, he found the loophole, you know? So that kind of stuff. And it's just cool because, man, we had like so many friends from the industry show up and do the thing. And, you know, we did a Harley threw us some money this year to sponsor some events. So we did a Pan America only class.
Oh no shit.
You know, there's a couple dudes out there on, you know, so a couple of friends were on Pan Americas. I talked Jenny from Zero into racing a DSRX last year.
She knows how to ride too.
Yep. She's awesome. She talked a couple of her coworkers into doing, doing it this year. So Kyle did heavy ADV novice, which is three laps.
Okay.
And he finished the 75 miles with one charge with, I think, 8% battery left.
I'm kind of impressed that it did that much.
Yeah. And then Trevor did expert, and dude, they did a full battery swap after lap two. So they, dude, that thing has like a, what, 17.3 kilowatt battery?
Yes,
thing's huge. So they had it, they were practicing at the office and had it down to like 4.5 minutes for a hot swap on this battery.
I'm impressed.
And yeah, dude, it's so cool. Like, I've got video of it. I'll show it to you later. But yeah, they basically, so they did that after lap two and ended up taking about 12 minutes because they brought this, you know, 4x8 sheet of plywood that with some slippery stuff on it so they could drop the battery.
Right.
Slide it out, put the other one in, but they didn't account for the front and rear wheels being off of the wood and the jack being on it. So it was like a little bit cattywampus. So it took them 12 minutes, but still the dude got second place. So he had like, you know, his laps were, you know, 44 minutes, 46 minutes, 58 minutes, 44 minutes. So he still got, he got third in expert, heavy expert class. So there was like him on that, a dude on a 1290, you know, Adventure R.
Like a proper expert level heavy bike.
Yep. So that was cool. And then Kyle, I think he got second in first or second. I don't remember. It's been 2 weeks. But just stuff like that, man. It's just cool to like see all these people out there. And we had, you know, our friends from Revit and Harley Davidson and Zero and, you know, dudes from Alpine Stars Racing and a couple of our friends from Bell. And just, it's turned into like this really cool industry event where we just all go in the desert and have a good time. And, you know, you can camp in your van, you can camp in a tent, you can stay in a hotel. It's about three hours north of us. Yeah. In Ridgecrest, California.
Okay.
But man, it's cool. It's a good time. You know, you can bring your family, you can bring your dogs.
It's funny. This is making me actually think of sort of like the one show. I had a thought as you were mentioning all these major motorcycle companies coming to something sort of laid back and fun like this. I always want them to do stuff like this and come out and have fun. And I always worry about this innate desire for a lot of these OEMs to draw a line in the sand of saying our stuff or no one's stuff.
Yeah.
And we deal with that as a dealership, and we've seen it happen in the industry a lot. And today I was kind of doing a quick lap around the one show after we set up, and I noticed, you know, previously the one show or anything like that was always about the Davins of the world building a motorcycle, bring it by and chatting about it and meeting all the cool peeps. And then before you knew it, some of the OEMs like helmet companies and gear companies and then motorcycle companies started saying, well, shit, we can come here. And then the purveyors of the show go, cool, it'll cost you X amount of dollars for you to come here and showcase your stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So it became, I mean, it always becomes, you know, sort of capitalized, and it costs money to do these shows. It's not cheap, especially as they grow bigger and bigger. But it was really interesting to walk around today and see Indian, Harley, you know, Ducati, Aprilia, BMW. I mean, all the major OEMs were there. And in my head, I was looking at them like, while I think that's cool, I hope that they understand the spirit of this thing,
yeah,
where it's just meant to be fun. Like,
yeah, this is supposed to be fun. It's not to make a bunch of money or to charge you a bunch of money. That's what, like, we do these events because they're fun. Like, we charge people to go there, yes, because it costs money to put on an event.
Right.
But it's like for our Parts and Labor Fest in January, it's like, you want a 10 by 20? $500.
That's
nothing. You know, it's like we have to rent this gigantic building at the Del Mar Fairgrounds. That ain't free.
Nope.
So it's like we have to pay for that. We just want people to come and have fun. And, like, you know, we use it as our blowout sale. So we take the back corner and all of our scratch and dent stuff and all the stuff that we just want to get rid of.
Just yeet it.
Yeah. It started as our parking lot sale and it just got too big. Like, you know, people wanted to, too many people showed up, and then we're just like, well, fuck, you know, we go to so many trade shows and they just suck.
Yeah.
You know, like trade shows, it doesn't matter if you're in Italy or, you know, Damascus, Syria, it's going to suck no matter what.
No, so, I've never had a good time at a trade show.
Yeah, they're not known to be fun. So doing something where it's like, hey, we're going to have a bike show and it's going to be fun and you can win some good money. You know, like Gregor, he came down 2 years in a row and he brought his Beamer down the first year and won. You know, he left with $1,000 cash because he won the ADV category. So it's like, let's make this fun.
Gregor is one of the most interesting people. So Gregor Holenda, for your listeners, is this Renaissance man, as far as I'm concerned. He can build a motorcycle. He is one of the most talented photographers and just, you know, visual directors out there. And he can teach you how to ride a motorcycle. He does our Adventure 101 classes for Moto Corsa. But like last year at the one show, he like swept the place. He had three different bikes and all three of them won.
Yeah.
And so like, it's really cool. Neat to have people like him. And then when he makes kind of like a quiet comment about, well, I wish this was better. It's like, well, I'm going to listen to you because you do it. You go there. You know how to ride really, really fast.
Yeah.
And it's awesome because I've seen people go up to him and fanboy about him. And I've seen people who have no fucking idea who he is. And he's just so kind and gracious to both.
Yeah. He's the same person to everyone. And I try to do the same thing. You know, it's like, this isn't, you know, a dick measuring contest. And so many people make it into
it's not.
One. It's like, yeah, we all have small wieners. Like
tiny. It's like, I ride a 200 horsepower motorcycle. Right? It's tiny.
Yeah. It's like, you know, let's just have fun. And like, getting back to what you said about all these brands coming together, like I've been on both sides of it. It's like, no, we want exclusive or not, you know, right. We're not going to be there. And it's like, man, after a few years of doing that, I'm like, there's enough room here for all of us. Like
100%.
I don't care if you sell jackets or helmets or motorcycles or whatever,
right.
Like there's enough room here for all of us. Let's have a good time. Let's ride motorcycles, have fun. And let's talk about how cool whatever was. Like,
I feel like some bean counter at the top and probably someone at the top rung of whatever company, you know, they have it in their heads. Ducati's like this. They have it in their heads that like you are supposed to ride a Ducati, wear all Ducati gear, drink Ducati coffee, you know, eat Ducati pasta.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, while I understand that, and I think I do wonder if a lot of them are trying to kind of copy the Harley Davidson ethos. Harley's been around for a long time, and Harley is first and foremost a lifestyle company, then yep. a motorcycle company.
Yep.
They've been around for a long time. They've spread their shit everywhere and everybody knows what it's all about, and it's the one brand where you see people tattooed on their body and they wear all the stuff, and yeah. all these other companies
don't even
want
listen to his music.
What's that?
I said they wear a shirt and don't even listen to his music.
Don't even yeah, exactly. right you don't even know who he is.
Yeah.
So it's like I get it from that side of it, especially having, you know, working in an exclusive dealership. But the part of me, which is the majority of me, that loves motorcycling for the sake of motorcycling and the people and the connections and the, frankly, just the fun, especially in this country, we do it for fun. We don't
yep.
do it out of necessity. It's for fun.
Yeah.
And so when I think of that in my head, it's like, I don't think Davin is going to wear all Ducati, ride only a Ducati and just only drive on Ducati lane.
Yep.
It's meant to be, we have all these options. And like you said, you know, like your New Zealander friends go, dude, we have one bike. It's very expensive.
Right.
In the US, you might have, if you're privileged, you have two or three in there and you've got a cruiser and a dirt bike and yep. a, you know, street bike or whatever. And you're not going to stick with one brand. And these brands really want you to do that. They want you to kind of have like their version of the thing. So much so, like now Harley has got an adventure bike. You know, they've got their cruisers. They're looking at doing some more street stuff because they want their buyers to just have Harley. And also to be able to conquest other riders of other brands to go, hey, I want to check out your thing because now you make something in the arena that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
I think that's possible to do and still have fun without constantly drawing a line in the sand.
Yeah. No, and I think that's, you know, on the Harley thing, like I've owned a few Harleys in my life and it's they are what they are, you know? And it's like when the Pan America came out, I bought one because I told my buddy that works there. I said, hey, if you guys ever make a motorcycle that I want to ride, I'll buy it.
Yeah.
And man, I thought the Pan America was cool.
You so loved like, it. You put some miles on that thing.
Yeah. I put 18,000 miles on that thing in 13 months and rode it to the top of Alaska and back.
You know, Davin rides, so you don't have to.
Yeah.
But I feel like you should ride anyways, even though Davin rides.
Yeah. No, I think everyone should ride. And I try to just, you know, like, man, I rode that thing. It was a great bike. For Harley to come out of the gate and make an adventure bike that good from the get-go was crazy. There's a few things I don't like about it, but there's a few things I don't like about my Africa Twin. There's a few things I don't like about my Triumph Tiger. You know, like,
I don't think there is a perfect bike out there. I mean, there's bikes that check off a lot of marks that I want to see them do. And I mean, we said it back when it came out. It was funny for me to watch Harley make a BMW and for BMW make a Harley.
Yep.
And watch Harley do a pretty fucking good job because they took it very seriously.
Yes.
And the BMW, the R18-12/12, whatever it's called, struggled. Yeah. I think it still struggles.
Yeah.
It's trying to...
No, that and the R18, it's just like, you can't... I think Harley can make an adventure bike, and Harley could probably make a dirt bike, but BMW and Ducati can't make a Harley.
No.
You know, like
no, absolutely not.
Proper cruiser. You
they've
know,
they've
like,
all tried.
Yeah. No, you know, the Ducati Indiana was one of the nicest motorcycles ever made. Yeah.
But
hello.
It didn't do well. It didn't... shit, I mean, fast forward to 2017 when the Desert, X-Diavel came out.
Yep.
Belt-driven, you know, primary drive and feet-forward controls. And it did well with not Harley riders. It did well for someone that wanted to have that weird, niche, oddball motorcycle. But it was never meant... It was meant to be a conquest bike to bring cruiser riders to Ducati.
Yep.
And it did okay with them, but it wasn't a bike that I took to any event and had Harley riders go, well, shit, I'm going to get rid of my whatever for this thing. Like, yeah, nobody ever said that.
I mean, the you know, Indian can do that. When I was at the Triumph shop back in the day, like, we had a bunch of club guys buying the Rocket, the original Rocket 3.
That's right.
Because it's not a Japanese bike, so they're allowed to own them.
That's right.
And man, those dudes bought the shit out. We sold like 50 or 60 of those things the first 2 years.
That's amazing.
It's crazy. Yeah, so it's neat. I mean, even with Yamaha, when they came out with whatever, you know, I think it was before the Stratoliner, whatever that push rod motor V-twin was, there was a joke that half of the engineers at the factory committed suicide because they had to go back in time to make a push rod motor.
We have to go way backwards. We've gone so far past this. We have a motor that goes to 16,500 RPM.
Yeah.
We got to make this thing?
Yeah, so it's a weird thing out there, but... it's cool to see, you know, Triumph and Ducati and everybody coming out with dirt bikes. And
I love that.
You know, like all the different things coming from all the different people right now.
It's neat to see them kind of, you know, delve into this, not just concentrate on making a motorcycle that's going to go against Harley, like concentrate on a motorcycle that's going to in a different category and a different culture altogether. So like entering dirt,
yep.
you know, when Ducati finally entered the adventure, the very, very heavyweight adventure with the Multistrada Enduro, and then they worked their way to like the Desert X. It was like, awesome, this is happening. And so, yeah, when I'm seeing now, you know, the dirt stuff, when Triumph announced it and Ducati was like, hold our Peroni, we're going to do it as well, it made me think, hey, well, is BMW going to be next? Are they going to do this? It's a, you know.
And they already tried it with the G450?
The G450, yeah. That wasn't really a BMW. That was like a, was that a Husky?
I think so, kind of. But that bike had some cool stuff where like the final drive sprocket and the swing arm pivot were on the same plane.
Wow.
So like you have to remove the swing arm, I think, to change the sprocket. But like you know, your chain was always at the same tension.
Fascinating.
So there's cool things like that where they tried it. I think they were a little bit early to the game maybe before all these different European brands became as big as they are now. But I know like Triumph was supposed to come out with an entire... like Power Sports line back in 2008 when the economy went to shit. They had like plans for this company.
Had to pause then.
Yeah. I feel like I'm the only person in the world that knows this, but I'm pretty sure I didn't make it up. But yeah, there was like Trident Power Sports was going to be the name of this like off-road wing that they were pursuing and never did. But man, with the bike stuff, like they hired Ricky as a whatever he's doing with them, ambassador/developer when I was working there. And Rod, the guy who's in charge of Triumph North America, he came over from Suzuki and he was a head of race at Suzuki for a long time. So there's connections there and people know stuff and it's cool to see.
Huh.
Man, I, you know.
I kind of saw something in Austin that made me pause. It's been a long time since I've walked through like the motorcycle alley, you know, the OEM alley, and just kind of go, holy shit, what the fuck is that? So an old name, Buell, is still around.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Buell sold it off and it's a different group that's running it.
Correct.
And so they have the old school, like 1190, sport bike and the 1190
CR. Yeah.
Yeah. The naked bike. But then there's like this super cruiser.
Yeah.
That was hella interesting to me.
Yeah, that thing is sweet. Like, it's a modern FXR.
Yeah.
Basically, the frame. Like,
it's supposed to weigh 450 pounds.
200 horsepower.
200 horsepower. And, like, proper ground clearance. But you're still, you know, on a cruiser. You're, like, on this badass FXR-style motorcycle. It's not particularly my quote-unquote style of motorcycle, but it stopped me dead in my tracks.
Yeah, the thing is awesome. Like, when they announced that thing a couple of years ago, man, that is what the people want.
Yeah.
You know, like that side of it, like all these dudes are building these FXRs and new Softails and stuff to do all these crazy things. Well, that thing's got that big, I think it's still a Rotax motor that
it is.
Using.
It's the same motor that's on the sport bikes.
Yeah. And it's, that thing's bad to the bone. And they had something like 250,000 deposits or something stupid on that thing when they put it live. And it, I think it was like a $10 deposit or so. I'm pretty sure I put a deposit still, on one.
I think I put one.
Yeah. That's, that's a lot of people. So if that thing becomes a reality, you know, that could be cool, but man, I don't know about the whole like Buell, you know, went from what it was originally when Harley got rid of it. And then it was EBR.
Right.
And then it was, you know, Eric Buell Racing or whatever. Now it's like Buell again. And it's owned by some, some dude in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Not sure how that's going to work out.
I don't know either. I'm, it's funny to watch them still trying to sell the sport bike that was new in 2014
as a new bike,
as a new bike with no real updates to it. And they're not necessarily affordable. It's not like, oh yeah, it's a $13,000. No, it's like 20 something grand.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you look at that and go, well, I can go buy any of these other major brands that are updated and have something interesting. If your fetish is to have an American sport bike, there you have it.
Uh-huh.
But that Super Cruiser,
the Super Cruiser,
and it's
badass.
Like, guys, let's get rid of these fucking sport bikes and just concentrate on this thing. And I'm sure they're trying to sell those to fund this Super Cruiser. But, you know, it's neat to see. It's funny because in my head, I'm like, this thing is so outdated. And then they're using the same motor and a lot of parts from it to this,
this thing is from the
Super
future.
Cruiser. And it looks like, yeah, it's from the future suddenly. And it's funny because, like, when you look at it, it's this, listeners, I'm telling you, look it up. Just the Buell Super Cruiser. It's this.
It's dope.
I don't even know what the price point is because everything that they have on it is essentially a pre-production. So the one that they had it in Austin, it was just sitting there and there was a young lady standing next to it, Emily, and she's one of the engineers for the bike. And so I just was like, hey, may I sit on this bike? She goes, yes, only on one condition. You have to tell me what you think, but I want constructive criticism. I don't want just some bullshit. I was like, heard. So as soon as I sat on it, I'm like, fuck, this thing weighs nothing. Like, what the fuck? And drives, you know, rides a monster that's a little bit lighter than that bike. Mm-hmm. And that's a tiny little monster. And this looks like an American-made steel frame, you know, like it's got a chromoly frame on it. But it just weighed nothing. And the only thing I could come up with was like, I feel like your seat's too wide. If you made it a little bit narrower, then your shorter riders can ride it. And she was like, cool, we've already talked about that. It's in the works.
That's hilarious.
Like, we're
that
renewing.
Thing is like, it's bad. It's the motor, the frame, like the inverted forks, like wheels.
It's amazing. Honestly, never mind the seat. The only thing I was like scratching my head at, I'm like, listen, Buell, get rid of the fucking zero ZTL, the zero torsional, whatever the fuck. What is
the
brake.
The brake, yeah.
The single disc brake that goes towards the outer side of the rim. Have you ever ridden one of these things hard?
Yeah.
They stand up.
Yeah,
if you're making
you
hammer
on the brakes,
up.
It stands up. Yeah.
And it's like, I don't want this 450-pound badass cruiser to have that. So when I said something to them, they're like, well, this is the Buell thing. Like when people look at that, they know it's a Buell. And I'm like, neat. But you guys can now say, if you see a Super Cruiser, it's a Buell. Nobody else makes one of these yet. Uh-huh. And you can now just put some proper Brembos on it and have it also do the thing. It's probably the only bike in its category, aside from a Ducati Diavel, that made me go, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a cool bike. And I think it's going to be kind of expensive because you have to, you know, it's going to be 25 to 30 grand.
Probably.
Because, you know, they're going to sell however many they sell. But, man, you look at the new Lowrider S or Lowrider ST, those things are damn near 30 grand out the
door. They are. By the time you dress it up the way you want it, the Diavel starts at $26,000, 27 grand, 26, 995.
Man, so bikes are so crazy now. It's like, I remember when, you know, that's why I bought that T120. I'm like, man, this thing's brand new. I can get it for 10 grand.
Yeah.
It's fast. It's fun. It's cute. It's practical. I love it.
That bike is quintessential motorcycle.
Yeah, exactly. That is a motor. Like you look up motorcycle in the dictionary, it should be a black T120. Like the thing is so pleasant. Like I said before, it's just, I've had it for over 6 months and I still love it. So I must be doing right.
We were all giggling in Bluetooth. I think you and Tamara were connected to each other. And we were all connected to each other. And, you know, Joe's behind me and I'm just on your ass.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, man, David's just hauling ass on that thing. I'm like, here's the thing. David can haul ass on any vehicle you put him in. But it makes me so happy to see you on a little Bonneville that's like this chill motorcycle. Like you can just putt around town.
Yeah.
But you were just hauling ass down this mountain with a thing like, I'm actually surprised you didn't scrape any hard parts. You were just going.
Yeah, I know where it is. Like I can scrape my toes before I scrape my pits. So like I sit in it so I don't ruin anything. But man, that thing is like a lane splitting weapon too, because it's so low.
Oh, it's
and
so low
narrow.
And narrow. Yeah.
It's perfect. Like I tried to take my Tiger to work the other day and that thing's like every dickhead with a Dodge full size pickup with his tow mirrors out for no reason. I'm like, you know, clipping every single one of those, but the Bonneville is just perfectly
just fits right just through those giant so nice. Tow mirrors.
Yeah. I love it.
By the way, if you own a giant truck and you have tow mirrors and you're not towing something, give me a fucking favor. Pull them in.
Please fold your
like, tow what's
mirrors.
What's the point?
In. Yeah.
Your truck so looks like it has giant ears. Yeah. Looks goofy.
I look at every single one too and I'm like, you don't even have a receiver hitch on that thing. What are you towing? Nothing. You have no fifth wheel, you have no receiver hitch.
Just towing
stop
hopes and
trying
dreams.
So hard.
Hopes and dreams.
Yeah. But
the just, try hard mirrors.
Yeah.
We talked about the Widowettos on the
Widowettos.
Widowettos. Yeah. We decided that the Moscow Moto rackless system on every adventure bike that we see out here is the Widowetto.
A little Widowettos.
Widowetto.
That's adorable.
What are your hopes and dreams this weekend? What are you hoping to do and see?
I just want to see some friends.
Here we are. You've done it.
Yeah, exactly. No, there's probably six more people that are going to be in town that I'd like to say hi
nice.
To. Yeah, I didn't tell very many people I was going to be here just because I didn't know what was going on, really.
You're
going
to learn like 2 weeks after now when they hear this.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, there's a couple of folks that you know that I know that we know that should be seen.
Should get high-fived.
Yep.
Juicy high-fives.
Yep. Crisp. High five.
Crisp.
And an awkward side hug.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Those are, you're very good at those.
Yeah, exactly.
You
so
pull it in, touch hips.
Just squeeze.
Move on.
Yeah, exactly. Good to see you. Bye.
I want to talk about a bike I got to ride last week. One of our clients bought the Multistrada V4 RS. And it is, you know, the Ducati took the Multistrada V4 and then they made it into a Pikes Peak, which is a 17-inch wheels. And then they decided to kind of like turn the knob from 10 to 12 by putting the Street Fighter motor that's on my bike downstairs into that thing. And I saw the bike and I got really excited about it. And then there was one feature that they made standard on all of them that made me scratch my head and go, why are you doing this? But it was the dry clutch. Yeah, the fucking dry clutch. So I reached out to our friends in Bologna and I said, hey, what the fuck? I didn't say what the fuck. I was like, hey, it's a beautiful bike, but why this?
Yep.
And they said, because that is the best iteration of Ducati performance parts, and we want the bike to only have that on there. To which I said, neat, but this is not a race bike. This is a Multistrada, which means multi-streets, which means I'm going to go touring on it. Mm-hmm. And to me, it was like, it's the dream bike of putting my bags on it, riding it from here to LA, and then going to like Chuckwalla with y'all and doing a track day on it and riding it back home.
And then coming home to change your clutch plates out.
Yep. Because that clutch plate on every bike I've ever owned or serviced is a 3,000 to 4,000 mile clutch pack.
Yeah, no, they're not going to get over 5,000.
They're not going to. No, I don't care how ginger you are with it. It is, I will say, the smoothest transmission I've ever ridden.
Really?
Like brand new with 3 miles on it, I could find neutral instantly, which is like unheard of in the motorcycling world.
That's pretty magical.
So riding the bike, it is the most effortless bike I've ever ridden. It just, you can just relax and go drag knee on the bike. I've never worked so little in my life to go so fast as I did on this bike. And our client was so sweet and he's like, hey, how about you guys break it in for me? I live in Idaho. I don't want to come and go a bunch. So like, can you guys break it in, do the service and I'll come get it. And so his salesperson was like, hey, I'll do the first half since you're going to be gone. And then when you come back, you go ride it. And so I took it out to the gorge area and did like Klickitat Canyon and all just beautiful areas. Tires got all scrubbed in nicely, got it to 620 something miles, did the service. And when I came back, I was like, God damn it. I would forgive that stupid ass clutch.
Yeah. Is the dude that bought it like a racer boy or like a, just a,
he's a enthusiast. He definitely knows his way around a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And it was definitely like, he was the right person for the bike where he loves the bike and he's going to ride the shit out of it. And, you know,
knows it's going to require some clutch maintenance.
He totally knows it, right? It's a dry clutch. He understands what's going on with the bike. And it's funny, man. Like, I was so ready to just like be like, fuck you for doing this motorcycle. Because it's my dream Multistrada to have a Multistrada V4 with that fucking motor in it. Because the thing redlines to like 13,500 RPM. And it's geared to the moon. So it'll do 180 miles an hour.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And it's comfortable doing all that shit, but it's like, you guys, you should have just stuck with a fucking wet clutch.
Why you do that?
And then just let me choose the dry clutch if I want to be that guy.
Yeah, that would have been the smart thing, I think.
And that was it. That was my. That's the only flaw I can find within the motorcycle, aside from it being astronomically expensive, but it is a special bike. It's got the titanium subframe and that motor, all the best suspension and brake bits on there. I'm telling you, of all the street bikes I've ever ridden, this was like cream of the crop.
That's, what's the retail on that thing? 32?
38 grand.
38.
38 grand.
Still cheaper than a CVOST.
Still cheaper than a CVOST.
Okay.
And it's like anyone who has ridden a motorcycle for more than fucking month can get on this thing and comfortably ride it. It is so insanely approachable. And then you put it in sport mode and turn off a bunch of the nannies and it's like, oh, fuck me, this is a Street Fighter. Yeah,
that thing is bad.
It's like bananas.
It looks awesome, too. I love the way adventure bikes with 17-inch wheels look for some reason.
I do, too. Like, I'm such a fan.
That thing is so, yeah, the Pikes Peak has been a badass bike forever, but that thing is just like out of control.
And it's funny because the current, honestly, I've loved all iterations of Pikes Peaks. And just the current Pikes Peak, it's the perfect bike. It is awesome. Yeah. It has all the things. It just doesn't have that. So they all have their, what they call their Gran Turismo V4. It's the, you know, non-desmodronic valve motor that redlines to only 10,000 RPM. Oh, and they've geared it where you're always in the power. So the thing tops out at like 150 miles an hour. So when you get on this thing and you're like, oh my God, it's got legs on it. It just goes. It's okay. So I would love to. And I told the client, I'm like, hey, if you ever come to a track day, just let me do one session.
Please.
I just want to do one session in anger on this bike.
Yeah,
I will even co-op on a set of tires with you.
Comfortable that would be.
Oh my God. Just come off the session like, how was it? I'm like, no, I'm ready to go again. Yeah.
Drink my espresso. It was beautiful.
Like I just did a two-dayer at Thunder Hill with my Street Fighter. It took me 2 days to recover. I mean, I'm a fat fuck, but like that Street Fighter, first of all, I think T-Hill is one of the most physically demanding tracks on the planet, especially on a naked bike with 200 horses on it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of it, I'm like, my hands hurt. Yeah. My neck hurt. My everything hurts.
Ow.
And then on the Multistrada, it's like, I'm sipping on espresso while I'm going through this corner with my elbow on the ground.
Man, I've had well over 100 motorcycles in my day. I'm pretty sure it's probably closer to 100.
I feel like we're way over 100.
But my 2016 Multistrada is one of the probably three that I'm like, should have kept it.
Should have kept it.
Man, that was such a good bike.
I'm one of the, I think, few that really loves the Pierre Treblanche era, the original Multistrada, because it's such a lightweight. It was essentially a hyper motard with fairings on it.
Yeah. I had a 620.
Oh. The 620. Yes. You had the fucking black sheep of the Multistrada.
That thing was so adorable. Totes adorbs. Yeah, I bought it from one of my old
bosses.
It
yellow?
It was red.
What? I like the yellow. That's the only thing I wish they did more yellow.
The yellow one. Yeah, the yellow one was good.
I love that bike. It was so awesome. And then as the bike grew, it became kind of more adult-like and more less super bike-like. And it's funny because yours, the 2016, was like the most adult-like version of the Multistrada.
That one was perfect.
Yeah, they just wanted it to be like, and it was that era where we started using the word approachable on Ducatis. Like, hey, you can be anyone. If you can afford it, you can throw a leg over it and go have the time of your life and not have to work so hard.
Yeah.
And if you want to turn off all the nannies, more power to you. The thing will wheelie at fifth gear.
It was such a good bike. It was great for everything except for standing up on, which you don't really need to stand up on that anyway, because it's not an adventure bike.
It's a road bike.
Yeah. That thing, it had the perfect little snout. It didn't, you know, like the older versions had the weird nostrils.
That's right.
And this one had like the more kind of pronounced, straight you know.
They realized they don't have to make it ugly.
Yeah.
It was, which is, you know, a revelation. Ooh, speaking of adventure bikes with 17-inch wheels, KTM is now doing an 890
SMT.
SMT.
Yeah. I saw that. By the way, I know I keep saying yeah or yup a lot, so I knew I was going to say something. It was better than or ah. So to all of you guys listening, I know I'm saying that. I apologize. But yeah, what a weird bike.
It looks, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me, you know when like you go buy a brand new heavy duty truck, but it has like road tires on it?
Mm-hmm.
It looks like, it's like
an F450 Super Duty, you know.
But why does it not look weird on the Multistrada Pikes Peak?
I don't know.
It looks normal on that. And on this thing, I'm like, your feet are smaller than the rest of your body.
Does the KTM still have a high fender on it? Is that why it looks weird?
That'd be amazing. I gotta look this up.
Yeah, I was at the KTM HQ a couple weeks ago because they're right down the street from us, and I saw one there. I'm like, man, that thing just sucks to look at.
Yeah, it's wrong. Oh God. And it's funny, our friend that worked at KTM, it does have the high. Why does
that's
it have
why
the
high? It looks weird, because it's got a high fender on it. I hate high fenders, period, on adventure bikes. But yeah, don't do that.
What the frig? That's what it is.
Yes, it's because it has a high fender.
I literally stood there in the sun in Austin, just stared at the bike for like 5 minutes, and just, I had the whole conversation in my head like, no, I think it's just you. It's probably fine.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Thank you for saying something.
Yeah, you're welcome. I mean, yeah, that motor rips too. Like,
it is such a just a fun bike, ripe little motor.
Yeah, that thing sucks to look at with that high fender.
Oh God, dang it. Maybe you can get the S model, like the, no, because it's on a 21 inch wheel. I don't know. Maybe you can get a Duke front fender and put it on that thing.
Something we can,
the same wheels.
Call our buddy up at Altrider and have him start making low fenders for the SMT.
Hey, we're going to go the opposite direction. I know you guys are used to making high fenders for these things.
Can we do a low boy?
Can we just reverse this? Yeah, weirdest looking bike. I bet it handles like a fucking champ.
Yeah, no,
but it's comfortable as hell.
Sure, it's fun to ride, and it is just a riot. But
I don't know if you have
it.
To buy some kind of a subscription based thing to be able to turn off traction control on it or whatever.
Probably.
But
yeah, you have to get a dongle.
And
flash it.
God dang it! Stop it! Stop it with that shit. If somebody pays you money for your vehicle, let them do the thing.
Yeah, especially if it's got it on there. Like, I picked up a new 2023 Harley Davidson Softail Standard a few weeks ago for work. And we threw a bunch of our Biltwell stuff on it and had our buddy Hot Dog throw a bunch of flames on it. He's the same guy who did my cat tank on my chopper. And I bought a switch cube replacement that gives you a cruise control knob.
Oh.
And you just basically swap out the switch cube, you know, like, the stock one has a turn signal and headlights, and this one has another little button on it. And you buy it, plug it in, and then you go to the dealer and say, hey, can you flash this to tell it has cruise control now?
No,
and they do
shit.
That. Now it's got cruise control.
And the ECU on the bike?
You just tell it, hey, this has cruise now, and now it knows.
Is this like a cheat code?
No, it's a Harley OEM piece. So it's not like, you know, like with the 790s and 890s or whatever that new subscription thing is, like, you get to try it for a month.
Yeah.
And then it stops working.
Fucking
where this
move.
Like, you actually have to spend $300 on this new switch cube, and then
fine.
Probably 50
that's
bucks
fine.
On it. Yeah, because I want cruise control.
Yeah,
so.
Like if you buy whatever motorcycle doesn't have heated grips on there, just buy the thing and it's got it.
Yeah,
fascinating.
Uh-huh. So
look at Harley's getting with the times. I'm here for it.
Yeah, so I'm gonna be cruising around in this flamed out Softail. I'm gonna try to made a joke the other day on my Instagram machine that I'm a modular helmet, a cute vest away from infiltrating
fucking
all the local
sexy.
Bike lanes. Yeah, so
I'm waiting for the day you get a Goldwing.
Dude, I'm so close to getting a Goldwing.
I want one so bad, especially, we did the Goldwing episode back in the day at the Brap Talk, and it's like, I fell in love with that stupid fucking bike.
Dude, they're so nice. Like, I forget they exist sometimes. And then,
how
like,
dare you?
Yeah, I had a 79 Goldwing when I lived in Detroit.
We had the old school one.
Yeah.
Naked?
But, it was naked.
Yeah, that's sexy. That was a 4-cylinder though.
Yep. Yeah, no, only had 4. But yeah, these new ones, man, they're just so comfortable. Like, in the last 2 years, I've kind of been more interested in putting miles on again, where, you know, years past,
as opposed to the last couple of years where you've only put 25,000 miles a year on a motorcycle. Right.
I make it a, you know, like, I don't want to go out and ride around in circles in the dirt. I want to go out and put on 250 miles. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. So I'm going to ride out to Michigan in a few weeks to visit my parents, and then, kind of cruise back. And
wait, what bike are you going to do that on?
My Tiger 1200.
Oh, okay. Not the Harley.
Nope. So I'll do it on my Tiger. I just put some Metzler Torrance Next 2s also on it.
More touring-y?
Yeah, just something that's not going to melt off, because I'm going to do about 3,000 miles there and then dump it at my buddies in Minneapolis, and then do like a 4,000 mile ride home up through Canada in August. And I want something that lasts the whole time.
Fascinating.
So I might do some off-roady stuff up in Canada, but man, a Goldwing would be tits for this ride.
That would be. Oh, so man.
Maybe I've got 2 weeks to trade it in.
You do. You have plenty of time. I've seen weirder things than you changing motorcycles on a whim.
Right. I've kept that Tiger for over a year, so.
I think the Harley was the longest year. The Pan America. The old Dirt Glide.
No, that was a year.
That was
13 months.
Ah.
I sold it after
that.
Is that
the Dave and turnaround time? About 12, 13 months and then move on?
Sometimes. I mean, since COVID struck, I've been buying a new bike every 6 months.
I like your style.
So I bought
Dear listeners, are you listening to this?
I bought my Scrambler. That was my demo at Triumph. I had a new Tiger 900 on order, but then when COVID happened, I was like, okay, better. I'll just let one of my dealers take that.
Ease up, ease up.
I'll buy my demo.
Right.
So I bought my Scrambler. And then a few months later, I bought the Husky FX450. And then a few months later, I traded that in on a Multistrada. And then I traded that in on a... traded the Scrambler in on the Pan America. And then traded the...
I have a theory. For me, anyways. I don't have enough money for all the bikes, but I have enough money to just trade in every couple of years.
Exactly. So I trade in the Multistrada and Africa
Twin. Try everything.
Yeah. I've had the Africa Twin for longer than anything. That's the bike I've had forever.
Ah, that's right.
I've had that bike for almost 4 years.
Fuck, I forgot about the Africa Twin.
Yeah, I still have it.
What? Are you in love? Are you guys going to get married?
I love... Okay, here's the thing with the Africa Twin. I have a 2019 Africa Twin Adventure Sports. Beaverton Motorcycles bought a gaggle of them just as the 20s were coming out.
Right.
And for a week, they had them up for $99.99.
Holy shit, what?
That's an $18,000 bike.
Can you
it was
imagine?
Brand new in the crate, and I'm like, fuck. So I ran over there with my Multistrada, and I'm like, take this.
Yeah.
I'll take that. And it was basically a wash. And
I feel like you can sell it now and still make money on it.
Ew.
At least come out even.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's what I would call well seasoned.
Yes, exactly.
Adult no, own. Always seen rain.
Yeah. Dude, remember that time we got caught in that humongous mud hole?
Yeah.
The whole bike was buried. Yeah. Damn.
There's a video of you covering me in so much mud.
Yeah. If you go to at MotoGluten on Instagram, you can see some of my motorcycle history. There's one, if you get on, probably 3 years of me in this gigantic water hole that's up to the gas tank.
Yeah.
Just, there's a picture of the Africa Twin and then slide over one. And there's a photo of me just railing it.
This was the time you were at Icon and we all had the Raiden suits on. And I will say I was bone dry.
Yeah. We looked cute and
we looked adorable.
Dry.
We started out gray. We ended up brown.
Uh huh. Yeah. But anyways, that bike, I love riding it off road, but I hate riding it on the street.
No shit.
It is a terrible street bike for me. Like the fact that the engineers like rode that thing down the road and were like, okay, this is good. Yeah. I'm like, dude, fuck this bike. It's terrible on the street.
That's interesting.
But then there's guys that like come from their dynos or FXRs. I'm like, man, this bike rules. I'm like, yeah. Cause you've been riding.
Well, yeah. Compared to that fucking heap you're riding. Of course it rules. There's guys that ride KLR 650s that WR250 and go, holy fuck, this is amazing.
Yeah. So yeah, the Africa Twin is definitely one I've had for.
Have you ever had a KLR 650?
I've never had a KLR 650.
Why have you never had a KLR 650?
I do currently own a DR 650.
Mm, it's not the same.
It's not. But man, that DR, I thought that thing was going to be a pile of shit, but.
I've been noticing you put some miles on it.
Dude, I sold my Beta because I didn't ride dirt bikes.
You sold the Beta and bought a DR 650. Yeah,
I did.
Maybe you'll sell the DR 650 and get a KLR 650 now.
I should.
I think you're the only person that could probably make a KLR 650 be kind of cool.
Yeah, I doubt it.
We make it a point in this podcast to always mention the KLR 650. Okay. And we have certain listeners who have them and they love them. And I respect them for that.
My buddy Jesse has had every generation.
Really?
And I think he still has two.
See?
He just bought a new T7. But he also has the same problem I have is he just buys new bikes every few months and doesn't ride his as much as I at least I ride mine. Like I'll put on, 20,000 miles in a year.
At it.
Yeah. No, I'll ride the shit out of mine. Like I bought that Bonneville in November and I think I'm about to hit 6,000 miles on it. So I'm averaging about 1,000 miles a month on that.
That's fucking awesome.
I've got 17,000 on my Tiger. I've had that for a little over a year. The Africa Twin is that's like that poor thing. It's only got 20,000 miles on it. I've had it for 4 years.
The thing is, it'll still fire up tomorrow.
Exactly.
It'll never let you down.
It's always there.
It'll ride like garbage on the streets, unless you put some like street tires on it.
Yeah, but that thing, I just like raging on it. Like, man, I did LAB to V on that last year. And my friend Jenny from Zero was on her Beta.
Right.
And we were mobbing. Like we were going so fast through this one section. I was like, holy fuck, we are flying.
We're going to die.
Yeah. And dude, we get to the end and Jenny's like, were we going fast just now? Like, dude, we were going fast for dirt bikes. Like, I should not be going this fast on this adventure bike. We were hauling.
That's amazing.
Literally, we like lost our, there was like nine of us. We lost everybody else. Half the group showed up. They're like, oh yeah, you passed us about a half hour ago. We were sitting on the left and you guys didn't even notice. And then the other just two guys, a couple of our buddies from Seattle, they were so fucking pissed because they're not used to riding in sand.
It's not easy, man. I'm not used to it either.
Yeah, no, they were pissed. Like, Greg had just picked up an 890R ADV, and then Will had a Touareg 660. And
both are supposedly perfect bikes for that kind of condition.
Yeah, they're used to riding on slippery routes in Seattle, and they were not having a good time right now, bro.
Fuck.
But yeah, it was so much fun. So then when I got home from that, I'm like, I guess I don't need this beta anymore, because I hadn't ridden it very much. Like, I've ridden it three times since I've been down there. So I sold that to Joe and Haley.
That's where it is.
Yep. And then I bought this DR650, and man, it is fun for everything except for tight technical single track. Cause that was, dude, I nearly exploded my foot.
Webraptalk@gmail.com. If you have a KLR650 and you've done the LA to Barstow to Vegas, send me pictures. I want to hear a story. I will talk about it on the air. I'm so interested. Please.
Yeah. There's a gnarly spot going up through Red Rocks I think it's on the hard part. I mean, there's just bodies everywhere. People lying all over the place.
Oh god!
Just like, dude, like people ripping engine cases open. Oh god! And like, and then there's me just.
And your African twin just. African
twin. And excuse me. Come there's like people cheering me on and like just looking at me like I'm crazy.
You are crazy. That's a fucking 500 plus pound motorcycle.
Yeah, it was so fun.
That is so great.
Yeah,
I love that.
It was awesome.
Do you want to go and have a pizza?
I think so.
Or did you already have a pizza? Do you want to have a taco?
I had pizza already today. I want to have a Cuban. I want a ropa vieja.
Great. Let's go get a ropa vieja.
Okay.
Do you have any questions for our listeners so they can give us an answer?
Do I?
Yeah, you always have the best one-liners.
Oh, man, you're putting me on the spot.
I know. That's the whole point of this podcast.
Okay, cool.
You're literally on the spot.
Yeah, literally. I'm on the spot. No, I don't know. I don't have questions. I mean, I just think everyone should get out there and ride their motorcycles a little bit more.
That's honestly, you ride more per month than most people do per year. And you're like my muse. In fact, I'm going to end this with this. I always love to give a little bit of love to our friends at Rever. And you are one of the people.
I'm going
to
tell you how many miles I'm at so far.
I bet you're at, what is it? This is the fourth month of the year. You're probably at 10,000 miles already.
7,508.
I was close. I'm disappointed in you.
Yeah. 7,500 miles year to date. So you can see my February was nicer because.
So Davin uses Rever and turned me onto it a long time ago. Our friend Bjorn runs a company. It's pretty fantastic app for your phone. I believe it works better on iOS than Android setups, but it still works on those really, really well. And if you don't have a Rever subscription, I think it's worth it because
for sure
it allows you to connect with people and see the kind of rides they have. Like, you can follow Davin on there and see the kind of rides he does and then go do them yourself. Or if you're part of a group, like, you know, here we have the Ducati owners group, or if you're part of a Harley group or anything like that, you can then set up a group ride and create a ride for people to go and check out on the computer. You can create it on the computer and then check it out on their phone, and then they can go ride it. It's like having a Google map. It's like having a...
For sending, like, hey, can you send me a link to that ride?
And then right, exactly.
Them, so.
And it's awesome because it becomes this really cool, like, social event of, like, hey, let's keep each other in check and go ride our motorcycles and let's check out these different routes. But then the other cool thing is that they've partnered up with Butler Maps. And so it has the Butler sort of better, you know, good, better, best... you know, roads for motorcycling, for excitement and beauty and all that stuff. And you can overlay that over it. Yeah. Here's the best part. None of these guys are paying me for it. I just really, really like this.
No, it's seriously this program. Good. They've been floating me a membership for a few years just because I try to do as much as I can with them. But man, like, it just keeps getting better. Between the Butler Maps things, they're putting like OHV locations, like, you know, lost highways. There's so many new things on there. Now you can actually create communities on there where it used to be where, you know, if it was an event, you could create a community, blah, blah, blah. But now they just put out a new release. So I've been using this app since the day it came out.
And yeah, you're one of the first.
Gotten through all the hiccups that they had in the first few years. But yeah, I've tracked 130,581 miles on this app. That's not, you know, when I was living here, I wasn't tracking every single ride, but now I try to track like my commute, everything.
Yeah.
Just because I love statistics.
Statistically, you're riding a lot.
Yeah. So I did 26,000 some miles last year. My goal was 24. I'm going to shoot for 24 again this year. I'm already at 75. So
nice.
We'll see. But yeah, get out there. There's a lot of cool shit to look at.
And get out there. It's Rever, R-E-V-R.co is their website. The membership's like $40 a year. worth every dime. And again, we can all kind of connect together. I don't have much else to talk about, man. I want to go and have some food and go visit some friends. All the One Show people are here, and we get to go hang out with them. And I'm really glad you finally made it to this podcast.
Man, I'm so excited to be here. This was cool. I appreciate this. And man, it's so good to see you.
So good to see you. Well, as I always tell our listeners, safety third, make good choices. Damon, what do you got?
Bye.
Same bye. Love you.
Do you suffer from anxiety or depression? Have you tried riding a motorcycle?